I'll invite to the stage Mr. Dick Smith. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's indeed an honour to be the patron of the Wireless Institute of Australia. In my 20 minutes, I'd love to be talking to you, by the way, about adventure, and maybe we can do that tomorrow at lunchtime, because many of you would know that in my flights around the world, I've used amateur radio, especially the very first flight solo in the helicopter. And if you remember, it was the time of the Cold War in 83, and I had to land on a ship between Japan and Alaska. And we used amateur radio all that day. Many of you probably listened. It was one of the most interesting times I've ever had, one of the most frightening times. I'll not only tell you the story tomorrow, but I'll also show you the beacon, which was made up from Dick Smith electronic parts that we had on the ship. We had on the ship, my friend Don Richards put the cable, the antenna cable over a crane, and I used that as a direction finder. Remember, in 1983, no such thing as GPS. So a little bit about me. I want to tell you how amateur radio was so intricately involved in Dick Smith Electronics. And the foreigners might know here, but Dick Smith Electronics is an Australian-owned company, now does about $2 billion a year turnover. It's owned by Woolworths, one of our most successful public companies. It's moved off from more components now into the large screen TVs and things like that. But I'm very proud that something that was started over 40 years ago is still operating and employing Australians. I was born in Roseville in 1944. I often think I won the lottery of life, being born in Australia in the 40s. And as a young kid, I used to go over to my grandfather's place, and if I was a good little boy, 5, 6, 7, I was given the key to Harold's room. Harold was Harold Casno Jr., who was a radio enthusiast, and he went to the Second World War, and he was killed in Tobruk. And he was killed in about 1941, I think. I was born in 44, and here it was, 10 years or so later, I was allowed to go into his room. And his room was set up with the most wonderful bits of radio, transformers, headsets, coils, meters on the wall. And my grandfather, he was devastated, of course, my grandfather was, when his son Harold died. So they just shut up the room and left it as it was. Of course, I didn't realise the effect it would have on me and be the career probably for the rest of my life. I loved this room, and gradually as I got older, I built my first crystal set. I think I was about 8 or 9, and I didn't have enough money for a good headset, and so someone gave me an old dynamic microphone, and I can remember to this day, just as I remember when President Kennedy was shot and when man first stepped on the moon, I remember at home in East Roseville listening to this dynamic microphone and saying I could hear bagpipes. And my mum and dad were saying, "No, you're imagining it." And finally my sister listened and she could hear bagpipes too. So my crystal set was working. And we all know those who are enthusiasts with radio. Now, I must tell you, I was hopeless at school. I had a speech defect. Couldn't say the letter S until I was about 9 or 10. When you've got a name like Dick Smith, it's quite hard. And I used to be, you know, laughed at by the kids and that. People didn't realise that, you know, that you don't laugh at things like that. And it gave me a terrible inferiority complex. I left school at 15 and I got a job in a factory doing process work. And I actually found that job even worse than school. So I went back and managed to do my leaving certificate. And it was interesting because around about that time I was into telephone parts and I built myself a noughts and crosses computer using standard parts from a telephone exchange. Does anyone ever remember Dietz Brothers in Oxford Street? Oh, there you are. Well, I'd go to Dietz Brothers, the old disposal store, and buy telephone parts and uniselectors. And believe it or not, I built this noughts and crosses computer that you couldn't beat out of old bits and pieces. Now, 1962 was a big year for me. I finally got my leaving certificate, got a job at Weston Electronics, who made taxi radios. And then after about 6 months, the most amazing thing happened. I was working on the back bench, pop riveting valve sockets into the chassis, and someone came running in and said, "Look, they've got a new set, a new two-way radio." And someone said to me, "Oh, that's Maurie Finlay." And I thought, Maurie Finlay? He used to work for electronics or radio and hobbies in those days, and he designed the first crystal set I built. And they said, oh, yes, he used to work here, but he's now gone out on his own and he's competing with Western Electronics. And I listened, and then I heard that his factory was over in the Eastern Valley Way just near Roseville. So I raced out. I was, 17 years of age, and I went to a public phone box and finally got the phone number for Findlay Communications and rang him up. And Maurie Findlay, I said, look, I'd like to get a job closer because I was driving my motor scooter right across Sydney. Those days, no bash hats. It's a wonder I was alive. And Maurie gave me a job, and he became a friend ever since, and I was only talking to him a couple of weeks ago. So Maurie Findlay, who many will remember was a writer with Radio and Hobbies, Electronics Australia, of course, Silicon Chip Now, he sort of had this influence with me. But something else happened, because I was interested in amateur radio, and I was told, oh, look, Dick, there's a wealthy doctor who's a shareholder in this company. His name is Dr. Tony Balthazar, VK2IH, and you should talk to him. So I rang up Tony Balthazar and decided to go over and talk to him. He lived at Point Piper, and it was obvious that he was pretty wealthy, the place he lived in. He was a bachelor, and he loved amateur radio, and he loved the out of doors, and I loved both things too. So we became very good friends. And in fact, Tony ended up becoming the Rover Scout leader of the Rover Scout group I was on. And I worked at Western, at Findlay Communications, and then I went overseas, basically adventuring. I loved the out of doors. And I came back, and Western Electronics had moved over right next to where Findlay was, and Findlay Communications had moved away. So I got a job with Western's as a salesman, selling two-way radios. And the first 6 months, I didn't sell any radios. Eventually, I started to sell them. And this was just in the days before valves were changing over to semiconductors. And in the second years of selling two-way radios at Western's, 1968, I was quite disappointed because I was a pretty good salesman and I would go out and sell new equipment, two-way radios to, say, transport companies, and I knew the product I was selling wasn't the best. And I'd go to Western's and say, when are we going to have solid-state equipment? And they kept talking about it, but it didn't happen. And so one day they said to me, oh, Dick, we're no longer going to fix the radios for Manly cabs. I saw my chance. I had $600. My fiance at the time, who's my wife now, Pip, she put in $10. Now, I always mention that because if ever we get divorced, that's how it's divided up, isn't it? I hope so. Anyway, and you wait for it, Tony Balthazar, VK2IH, loaned me the other, I think it was about $6,000, to start Dick Smith Electronics. And I started at the Big Bear at Neutral Bay and was selling STC 151 series semiconductor radios, fixing the Manly cabs, working 7 days a week, absolutely loving it. In the first 6 months, I remember my accountants, I still can't read a balance sheet, but I had a pretty good idea that I was making a dollar. He said, Dick, you have made more money than the Prime Minister of Australia in the first 6 months. Now, that was when the Prime Minister earned about $25,000 a year, but it was amazing. And I said, well, how come I don't have any money? And he said, well, you've got more stock, you've paid the tax, and you've done this and you've done that. And so I worked very hard on the business for about 3 years and did very well out of two-way radios, car radios I was selling, and maintenance. One day I went into town, into Sydney, to George Brown's. Put up your hand if you remember George Brown's. Now, George Brown's, they were a wholesaler selling electronic components in the old way. And if you went there and you stood at the counter, you could wait anything from 20 minutes to an hour and a half. People used to have fist fights, the customers, on who was going to be served first. And I remember after going there for about 6 months, I thought, gee, if you can be this bad, give service this bad and be crowded, I should get into components. And so what I did was I had Dick Smith Electronics then move from Neutral Bay to Gore Hill, and that was servicing the car radios and two-way radios. So I rented an old house just a few doors down from the Wireless Institute of Australia in Atchison Street. I was number 10. Can anyone remember what the WIA was at 14? 14, two doors down. And I opened $80 a week rent, selling electronic components. And then I was running the two businesses. Well, did I have something coming for me? After 5 months, in November of about 1972, the manager and his offsider suddenly resigned. And I thought, that's a bit strange. And I went down and I had to stand behind the counter myself in that. Anyone remember that little Atchison Street shop? Put up your hand. Isn't that wonderful? Well, that would have, because what happened, one Saturday night at about 1 a.m., Pip and I were going through the stock and I said, there's something wrong here. And we found that $50,000 worth of stock had been ordered in a matter of about 3 weeks, that the invoices had been thrown out, so they didn't come until the statement, and the stock had been stolen. We immediately got the police in. They said, oh, this particular manager, we know him, he's got form. They got a search warrant, but it's amazing. He had boxes of electronic components and he had receipts from Strange, the auctioneer, saying he'd bought boxes of electronic components. To cut a long story short, we never got the money back, but it was the best thing that could ever happen. Because I thought, well, for a start, what a stupid thing to do. I have a good two-way radio business. Why did I get into components? That was dopey. And I thought, what I'll do, and I remember my accountant said, well, Dick, what you should do is liquidate the business. And I didn't even know what that meant. And he said, well, you just sell off the stock, close it down. And I said, but hold on, there'll be at least 15 grand, 18 grand missing. And he said, well, bad luck. The people who gave you credits, a proprietary company, they lost their dough. And I remember thinking, how will I ever face people again? And he said, there's another alternative. You can appoint a receiver that will stay your bills for a while and see if you can trade out. And I remember thinking, I know what I'll do. I'll trade out, take me 2 or 3 years, then I'll close the business down and use that as a lesson and concentrate on what I'm good at, fixing two-way radios and car radios and so forth. The fascinating thing happened. In standing behind that counter where you came and I served you, I suddenly realised, wow, there can be money in this game if you did it simpler. In the old days, and the way we were doing it, we'd sell one resistor 12 cents, 27.5% sales tax. You'd write that down. Remember the great long invoices? And I thought, at that time, there was a company called Kitsets had just opened, and they just sold everything, including tax, for about half the price. So we got in touch with the tax department. I remember them saying, no, if you want to pay the tax on the stock, we won't let you pay it off over 6 or 12 months. You'll have to pay it as a lump sum. So I went to Custom Credit and borrowed the money, paid all the tax off, put all the resistors in together and then just started selling them in the Kitsets way. I'd also noticed overseas that a company had a catalogue. And I thought it was Lasky Radio in England and it used to be in the English electronics magazines. I thought I'll do a catalogue. So I sat at home, I took photographs of every component, Pip, but typed up the text, and we went down to this local printer, and I had Dick Smith Electronics Catalogue, 50 cents, and I wanted 5,000. He laughed at me. He said, Dick, you won't even be able to give them away, let alone sell them for 50 cents. Oh, I was worried, so I changed the order from 5,000 to 3,000. Remember the ad that said, Dick Smith, the first electronic catalogue? In those days, it wasn't in the magazine. Had to send for it separately, 50 cents. The interesting thing was we ended up selling so many catalogues, we were making more money out of selling catalogues than out of selling components. And I then realised there could be a fortune made in this business if you had the right stock. And so I looked up at my car radio business, and one day in installing car radios, I was lying under dashboards working for hours, earning $3 an hour. One day I wound the shutter down on that Gore Hill shop. We put Huger carpet tiles, they were the in thing, and wait for it, Muzak. Remember Muzak? And we opened the first self-serve electronic centre. And I remember when I opened it, I said to Pip, we're going to do $1 million a year out of this shop. We did. And the extraordinary thing was I'd go up on the Saturday morning to open the door, and there would be a line of 50 or 60 people waiting to get in. Saturday morning, sometimes we'd take $20,000, $30,000. Well, we rode the booms. Can you imagine it? Remember the CB radio boom? Of course, initially, Ari Bless used to sell CBs to hams, and then he started selling to everyone, and then you could buy CBs and hairdressers and things like that. So we thought, we better start selling CBs. I remember we got a little IBM computer, and they'd said, those computers were pretty basic in those days. It was a System 32, and they said, you have to size the actual, the boxes that you're putting the inputs into. They said, could you ever earn more than $10,000 profit on one item in 1 month? And I said, no, never. And then we thought, well, maybe we could. So we went to the thing that said we could go to over $10,000, which was $99,000. After we had the computer for 3 months, it suddenly exploded. Everything went wrong, and we rang up and we abused IBM, and they came out And they finally found out that what had happened, if you remember the high gain 5 CB radio, it was a beaut little radio that all of the pirates, dare I say it, wanted. It made over $120,000 for the month and blew the computer. And so in those days, I used to travel backwards and forwards to Hong Kong, to Japan, originally imported ICOM radios, then became the agent for Yaesu. We set up our ham radio department. I always remember the day that I landed in my plane at a country town, and this bloke came running out and he started patting the wing and kissing it. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, well, I'm a radio ham VK, whatever it was." And he said, I bought that wing, I own it." And in those days, I had no money for advertising, and so I had to come up with some ideas. The first idea was a petrol-powered pogo stick. I was reading Popular Mechanics, and it mentioned a petrol-powered pogo stick invented in America, $120. I sent my $120, bought it out, and then I rang up the newspaper and said, "Look, I'm going to bring these petrol-powered pogo sticks in, 20,000 of them, so housewives can go and do their shopping to the supermarket on my pogo stick." And that gave me my first publicity. I realised I didn't have any money for advertising, but you could get free publicity. Anyone remember the iceberg being towed into Sydney Harbour? I must tell you the story. How many minutes have we got to go? Not many minutes. What happened there was I'd originally thought I would tow a real iceberg up from Antarctica, and the idea was to cut it up into, this is no kid, into ice cubes and call them Dixicles and sell them for 10 cents each, and I was going to make $1 million an iceberg and tell people, con people into saying iceberg ice is so much different, you know, so much better than Sydney water ice. Well, it was became very difficult to organise because towing an iceberg, the damn thing melts on the way. But the media kept phoning me up and phoning me up, "When's the iceberg coming?" And one day Jerry Nolan, who worked for me, said, "Dick, why don't we bring a fake one in?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, April Fool's Day's coming." So what we did, we got a huge barge, 80 feet by 40 feet. We covered it in a plastic, white plastic. Then we towed it out the night before out to outside the heads. And then the next morning, I'd given that out previous Friday afternoon, I'd given all of my staff a list of every radio and TV station and newspaper. At that stage, we had 160 staff. And I said, "What you've got to do is get up at 5 a.m. and then ring these numbers and say, what's that coming in through the heads? It looks like an iceberg." Now, imagine if you're at the Sydney Morning Herald, you have 60 lines and they all just completely jam. They think something huge is happening. And so in the end, that morning, we had 2SM radio station on the iceberg. They called it Dickenberg 1. And as we towed it in with the Stenage Brothers barge, it was on the radio, then it ended up on every radio station, and the publicity was enormous for Dick Smith Electronics. It cost $1,200. The business expanded. We ended up with 50 shops, 500 staff. I didn't like it anymore, and I wanted to go adventuring. And it's interesting because I don't like things that are too big. I like to know who my staff are and who my people are. And also, I was in a position that most people would dream of. Imagine being in your 30s and ending up with, people will remember, I think I sold it to Woolies for over $20 million. And people said to me, "Oh, you're irresponsible. You should keep on going and expanding this business. You should be a Kerry Packer." They thought I was eccentric. But no, I wanted to go off and fly around the world in a helicopter, more ham radio, see this wonderful country, and also put something back into the country. And the time came to do the deal with Woolworths, and we were finally signing things up in an office, and it went backwards and forwards. If I remember rightly, a dollar went backwards and forwards. Would that be right, Chris? You know something about a dollar? I don't know what the dollar was, but it was some significance. And finally, the chairman of Woolworths said to me, "Well, Dick, the deal is done. What are you planning to do to celebrate it?" And I said, "Well, now imagine this, there's all the conservative Woolworths directors all standing there." I said, well, may you ask, I said, "Tomorrow morning, I'm jumping a double-decker bus over 17 motorbikes." Well, it was just silence. Everyone just dropped their mouth. And I noticed they'd been talking about how they were going to announce it the next morning. They suddenly decided they would announce it on the Monday. I think they thought I was going to kill myself. And you might remember that we got that wonderful publicity when Evel Knievel was jumping motorbikes over 17 double-decker buses. And I said to the media, I mean, the media will believe anything. I said, well, I said, I don't know how to drive a motorbike, so I'm going to jump a double-decker bus over the motorbikes. And we did that. We cleared 16 of the bikes, if I remember rightly. I was the bus conductor standing on the back and in my bus conductor's uniform, because I convinced the media that the union said you had to have a bus conductor. My plan was actually to jump off before it went up the ramp, but it was going so fast, my friend Hans Thulstrup, the adventurer, was running it. It was going so fast that I wasn't game to jump off, so I held on, and it was a fantastic ride until it hit the ground. But look, all I want to say to you is thank you for your fantastic support over the years. The Wireless Institute of Australia is a wonderful organisation, 100 years old. I don't get onto the airbands very much, but in each of my aircraft I've got an HF synthesised radio transceiver. So sometimes I come up on 20 metres, 14146, and it's amazing. People are quite amazed. Is that you, Dick? We can't believe you're on air. And I say, it's certainly me. Thanks for listening to me. Thank you.
Put your hands together for Dick Smith. Thank you very much.